His safety harness held, though, and within an eye blink he heard the howling screech of the tiny retro-rocket motors. The front of the plane seemed to be on fire. They were bouncing, jolting, rattling along like a tin can kicked across a field of rubble. Then a final lurch, and all the noise and motion stopped. "We're down," Rodriguez sang out. "Piece of cake." "Good," came Dezhurova's stolid voice. Fuchida urgently needed to urinate. "Okay," Rodriguez said to his partner. "Now we just sit tight until sunrise." Like a pair of tin sardines, thought Fuchida, as he let go into the relief tube built into his suit. He did not relish the idea of trying to sleep in the cockpit seats sealed in their suits, but that was the price to be paid for the honor of being the first humans to set foot on the tallest mountain in the solar system. He almost smiled. "I, too, will be in the Guinness Book of Records," he thought. "You okay?" Rodriguez asked. "Yes, certainly." "Kind of quiet, Mitsuo." "I'm admiring the view," said Fuchida. Nothing but a barren expanse of bare rock in every direction. The sky overhead was darkening swiftly. Already, Fuchida could see a few stars staring down at them. "Top of the world, Ma," Rodriguez quipped. He chuckled happily, as if he hadn't a care in the world. In two worlds. Dossier, Tomas Rodriguez. Never show fear. Tomas Rodriguez learned that as a scrawny, asthmatic child growing up amidst the crime and violence of an inner-city San Diego barrio. "Never let them see you're scared," his older brother Luis told him. "Never back down from a fight." Tomas was not physically strong, but he had his big brother to protect him, most of the time. Then he found a refuge of sorts in the dilapidated neighborhood gym, where he traded hours of sweeping and cleaning for free use of the weight machines. As he gained muscle mass, he learned the rudiments of alley fighting from Luis. In middle school, he was spotted and recruited by an elderly Korean who taught martial arts as a school volunteer. In high school, he discovered that he was bright, smart enough not merely to understand algebra, but to want to understand it and the other mysteries of mathematics and science. He made friends among the nerds as well as the jocks, often protecting the former against the hazing and casual cruelty of the latter. He grew into a solid, broad-shouldered youth with quick reflexes and the brains to talk his way out of most confrontations. He did not look for fights, but handled himself well enough when a fight became unavoidable. He worked, he learned. He had the kind of sunny disposition and firm physical courage that made even the nastiest punks in the school leave him alone. He never went out for any of the school teams, and he never did drugs. He didn't even smoke. He couldn't afford such luxuries. He even avoided the trap that caught most of his buddies, fatherhood. Whether they got married or not, most of the guys quickly got tied down with a woman. Tomas had plenty of girls and learned the pleasures of sex even before high school, but he never formed a lasting relationship. He didn't want to. The neighborhood girls were attractive, yes, until they started talking. Tomas couldn't stand even to imagine listening to one of them for more than a few hours. They had nothing to say. Their lives were empty. He ached for something more. Most of the high school teachers were zeros, but one, the weary old man who taught math, encouraged him to apply for a scholarship to college. To Tomas's enormous surprise, he won one. Full tuition to UCSD. Even so, he could not afford the other expenses, so he again listened to his mentor's advice and joined the Air Force. Uncle Sam paid his way through school, and once he graduated, he became a jet fighter pilot. More fun than sex, he would maintain, always adding, "Almost. Never show fear." That meant that he could never back away from a challenge. Never. Whether in the cockpit or a barroom, the stocky Hispanic kid with a big smile took every confrontation as it arose. He got a reputation for it. The fear was always there, constantly, but he never let it show. And always there was that inner doubt, that feeling that somehow he didn't really belong here. They were allowing the Chicano kid to pretend he was as smart as the white guys, allowing him to get through college on his little scholarship, allowing him to wear a flyboy uniform and play with the hotshot jet planes. But he really wasn't one of them. That was made abundantly clear to him in a thousand little ways every day. He was a greaser, tolerated only as long as he stayed in the place they expected him to be. Don't try to climb too far. Don't show off too much. Above all, don't try to date anyone except your own. Flying was different, though. Alone in a plane 9 or 10 miles up in the sky, it was just him and God, the rest of the world far away, out of sight and out of mind. Then came the chance to win an astronaut's wings. He couldn't back away from the challenge. Again, the others made it clear that he was not welcome to the competition, but Tomas entered anyway and won a slot in the astronaut training corps. The benefits of affirmative action, one of the other pilots jeered. Whatever he achieved, they always tried to take the joy out of it. Tomas paid no outward attention as usual. He kept his wounds hidden, his bleeding internal. 2 years after he had won his astronaut's wings came the call for the second Mars expedition. Smiling his broadest, Tomas applied. No fear. He kept his gritted teeth hidden from all the others and won the position. "Big fucking deal," said his buddies. "You'll be second fiddle to some Russian broad." Tomas shrugged and nodded. "Yeah," he admitted. "I guess I'll have to take orders from everybody." To himself, he added, "But I'll be on Mars, shitheads, while you're still down here." Night, Sol 48. It was already night on the broad rolling plain of Luni Planum. Yet Possum Craig was still driving the old rover, cautiously at a mere 10 kilometers per hour. He and Dex Trumbull had agreed that they could mooch out a little extra mileage after sunset before they stopped for the night. Trumbull had the radio set to the general comm frequency, so they heard Rodriguez and Fuchida's landing at the same time the four in the base camp did. "Those two poor bastards gotta live in their suits until they get back to the dome," Craig said. "Look on the bright side, Wiley. They get to test the FES. The hard suits had a special fitting that was supposed to make an airtight connection to the chemical toilet seat. The engineers called it the fecal elimination system. The old trap door," Craig muttered. "I bet they wind up using K-O-Pectate." Sitting beside him in the cockpit, Dex replied with a grin, "While we've got all the comforts of home." Craig made a thoughtful face. "For an old clunker, this traveling machine is doing pretty well. No complaints. Not yet." Dex had spent most of the day in his hard suit. They had stopped the rover every 100 clicks for him to go outside and plant geology meteorology beacons. Now he sat relaxed in his coveralls, watching the scant slice of ground illuminated by the rover's headlights. "You could goose her up to 20, Dex prodded. "Yeah, and I could slide her into a crater before we had time to stop or turn away," Craig shot back. He tapped a forefinger on the digital clock display. "Time to call it a day anyway." "You tired already?" "Nope, and I don't want to drive when I'm tired." "I could drive for a while," said Dex. Pressing gently on the brake pedals, Craig said, "Let's just call it a day, buddy. We've made good time. Enough is enough." Trumbull seemed to think it over for a moment, then pulled himself out of the cockpit chair. "Okay. You're the boss." Craig laughed. "Sure I am." "Now, what's that supposed to mean?" Trumbull asked over his shoulder as he headed back to the minuscule galley. Craig slid the plastic heat-retaining screen across the windshield, then got up and stretched so hard that Dex could hear his tendons pop. "It means that I'm the boss, long's you want to be agreeable." "I'm agreeable," Dex said. "Then everything's fine and dandy." Sliding one of the prepackaged meals from its freezer tray, Trumbull said to the older man, "No, seriously, Wiley, Jamie put you in charge. I've got no bitch with that." Still stretching, his hands scraping the curved overhead, Craig said, "Okay, fine." "Something bugging you?" "Nah, forget it." As he put the meal tray into the microwave cooker, Dex said, Hey, come on, Wiley. It's just you and me out here.